You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Don't give up on your hope and faith. We will get there. We will get there together. We're going to continue our discussion from the last hour. If you missed any of that, it has been a bit of a bomb-dropping barn burner. I have shared copious amounts of audio of the president and Charlie Kirk saying things that I think most Americans, if they're being honest about, would find to be hate speech, would say, yeah, that sounds really hateful to me. And if it was directed at me or my family or a group that I belong to, I would not be okay with it. And I want to now deal with this tension point that Republicans now seem to be totally cool with censorship. And censorship by proxy, because that is what happened in the instance of Jimmy Kimmel. And it is important to remember what Charlie Kirk and others have said about free speech. Charlie Kirk used to say, this is from May of 24, hate speech does not exist legally in America. All speech is protected by the First Amendment. Keep America free. Now, to be clear, the First Amendment prohibits the government from censoring people. I can be fired for saying something that my boss doesn't like. I can't complain about that. In the private sector, it's different. But what happened with Jimmy Kimmel, what happened with Colbert, is that via pressure being applied through government regulatory agencies that have the power to approve billions and billions and billions of dollars in mergers, and in the case of the merger being considered for, amongst the ABC affiliates, that is Nexstar and Tegna, for that merger to be consummated, Brendan Carr, the head of the FCC, has to provide a waiver to a longstanding rule that the FCC has had to avoid monopoly control of everything that we see and hear on the airwaves, which states that one company cannot own more than 39% of broadcast television stations. So those ABC affiliates were experiencing pressure from FCC Chairman Carr. He went on a podcast, said, you know, these ABC affiliates should really think about pulling and preempting Jimmy Kimmel. And within 2 hours, Nexstar said they would do so, Tegna said they would do so, and then Sinclair Media said they would do so. Why? Because they want their mergers approved. That is government censorship by proxy. And that is incredibly dangerous. Now, again, let's remember the right has always been, you cancel culture, blah, blah. By the way, that was all garbage too. It was consequence culture because, again, private businesses, private universities, they can dictate what people can and cannot say. It is the government that cannot censor. So what used to be a problem for the right was a misguided identification of a problem. But now they seem perfectly comfortable using all of the powers of the federal government to squelch and silence speech from those who disagree with them. That is the problem. That's what we're talking about. Now, the first hour was all about pointing out the fact that what has been said by elite leaders with broad reach in the MAGA movement is much more violent and biased and bigoted than many of the things that we've ever heard from any Democratic leader elected or that has a massive platform. They're just not comparable. We've got to have our feet placed firmly on terra firma, deal with reality, to be able to address what's happening when we look at our First Amendment rights. With me for this next hour is former U.S. Attorney James Santel and each and every one of you. We're going to dig into the new openness to government censorship by the Trump administration. Gee whiz, who knew? All of these free speech absolutists like Charlie Kirk and Brendan Carr 2 years ago are now all about it. Let's take a breath before I bring Jim back on. We'll take care of some calls. Joe from Madison, you've been very patient. Thank you.
Hey, Joe.
I'm so glad that
you are tackling this subject, it is really important to try to get a sense of what is hate speech. And I think the clips that you played for us from that Seneca group are really important, and keep them on the back burner because this will come up again for sure. One thing that I read about...
Hey, Joe, before you can continue, if you are on speakerphone, can you please talk directly into your phone? We're having a little bit of trouble hearing you. Go ahead, ma'am.
Sure. That hate speech typically involves expressions that demean, humiliate, or incite hatred against a group based or an individual based on race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or disability, what are inherent in a person. This really sticks with me, given what Charlie Kirk had to say about black pilots, because I have an uncle who's since passed on, who was a bombardier pilot in World War II. 50 missions he had, and boy, it took a toll on him. I remember this man, very conservative man, looking at me at one point. He lived in Madison, and he said to me, the question of the Tuskegee Airmen came up, and he looked at me very earnestly, and out of the blue, he said, "Those guys saved my ass."
Thanks so much, Joe. Again, we're having a little bit of problem hearing you, but she was pointing out that the Tuskegee Airmen saved many, many men in what were basically fearless missions. The idea that you would assume that someone is not qualified because of their race is just as abhorrent as assuming that someone is qualified because of their race. In other words, no one, by virtue of their race, is entitled to any job or position of power. But that seems to be the thesis coming from the MAGA right. Let's take a couple more calls. Charles from Milwaukee, say hello to Jim. What you got for us?
Hey, Charles.
Hello, good afternoon, Maggie and Jim. Wow, so I had heard a few clips of Charlie Kirk after he was killed. I listened to you guys and I listened to MSNBC, and I never heard anybody on the civic media or MSNBC just talk about this Charlie Kirk and the way that the right wants to portray it. But wow, all of the things that you guys played, I don't know how any of them can fix their mouth and say this guy was a Christian. How they would fix their mouth to say, well, that's not what he really meant to say. He's not a racist. If you are not born into a black body, you should never fix your mouth to say what racism is or isn't, because you've never experienced it. Because black people have never been in charge and we've never oppressed anyone. But to hear this guy, what he said about black people, I know he said things about other people, but as a black man and having black grandkids and black kids, to hear this guy say, well, these women only got their position because they were black and they took a white person's job.
I'm concerned that the pilots of the plane are black. Right, Charles? And
Charles the other is observing piece, reality, right? Like, this is what was said.
Right. And it's the consistency of it also, Charles, right? This is not just, you would not in any way forgive it, condone it if it was one instance, but it is consistent and it establishes a record.
Yeah, if you had any doubt about it, David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, said this following Charlie Kirk's assassination. He spoke very eloquently against so-called equal rights. It's kind of funny how the talking points of the mainstream right people in this country, Republicans, have been articulated first on a massive level by me, David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. He said this as well. I saw Charlie Kirk very accurately, articulately pointing to my issues. I would like to think in some ways that Charlie Kirk, in a sense, ideologically, was a child of mine. From David Duke, former Grand Wizard of the KKK. This is what we're talking about.
Identified once again as mainstream thought, mainstream principles of conservative politics, conservative government in America.
And identified by Speaker Mike Johnson, Scott Jennings, commentator after commentator, the entirety of Fox News and OAN and Newsmax and every conservative outlet. by lionizing someone who spoke like this, does anyone have any concern what message you may be sending to your daughters, to Black folks, to Charles, to me, to anybody who might be LGBTQ? The message of that speech is that you are subhuman. In Donald Trump's language, vermin. We are the enemy because we are different. And to make no bones about it, no mistake about it, let's take a listen to Stephen Miller in the wake of Charlie Kirk's killing, talking about Democrats, talking about liberals, by extension, talking about all of those groups that Charlie Kirk attacked nearly every day on his podcast that had millions of people listening to it. Jacob, this is going to be cut 18.
That party does not fight for, care about, or represent American citizens. It is an entity devoted exclusively to the defense of hardened criminals, gangbangers, and illegal alien killers and terrorists. The Democrat Party is not a political party. It is a domestic extremist organization.
That's a lie, and Stephen Miller knows it's a lie. I've said on this program many, many, many times. Someone commits heinous crimes, they should be locked up, and if they're here illegally, they should be deported. Full stop. Democrats, liberals, progressive, black folks, the LGBTQIA community, women, immigrants, we all want the same thing. We're all humans. Here's more from Charlie Kirk. Take a listen here. Stephen Miller, cut 19. Thank you, Jacob.
What do you think they're trying to do? They are trying to inspire someone to murder them. That is their objective. That is their intent. And when you see online, Sean, as we've seen for the last few days, tape after tape after tape of federal workers, bureaucrats, staffers in the Pentagon, educators, professors, healthcare workers, nurses, celebrating the assassination of Charlie Kirk. These are radicalized people. There is a domestic terrorism movement in this country. And let me tell you something I'd not share with anybody, but the last message that Charlie Kirk gave to me before he joined his creator in heaven was he said that we have to dismantle and take on the radical left organizations in this country that are fomenting violence. That was the last message that he sent me before that assassin stole him from all of us. And we are going to do that under President Trump's leadership. I don't care how, it could be a RICO charge, a conspiracy charge, conspiracy against the United States, insurrection, but we are going to do what it takes to dismantle the organizations and the entities that are fomenting riots, that are doxing, that are trying to inspire terrorism, and that are committing acts of wanton violence. It has to stop.
He goes on and on. I don't care how. We're going to silence our opposition is what Stephen Miller, senior advisor to the president of these United States, said on national news. But Jimmy Kimmel's the problem. We're going to continue this discussion. I've got former U.S. attorney.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are trying to convene what is an incredibly important discussion. And yeah, I know it's Friday afternoon. Yeah, I know we're still trying to get the good stuff out of the summer. But this is so important. We've listened to absolutely horrifying rhetoric from our president, from Charlie Kirk, from Stephen Miller, senior advisor to the president. I pointed out to you that Brendan Carr, just a couple years ago, said that political satire is good free speech. That's a good thing. Charlie Kirk said hate speech doesn't exist in America, that it's all free speech. Brendan Carr said in 2019, the FCC does not have a roving mandate to police speech in the name of the public interest. Charlie Kirk actually submitted an amicus brief to the Supreme Court that said pressure applied to social media platforms to enforce the government's new role as an arbiter of truth clashes with the court's clear declaration that government may not, quote, prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion, end quote. And yet, this was our Attorney General, Pam Bondi, just last week. Let's take a listen. This is Cut 12.
There's free speech, and then there's hate speech. And there is no place, especially now, especially after what happened to Charlie, in our society. We will absolutely target you, go after you, if you are targeting anyone with hate speech, anything. And that's across the aisle.
And Donald Trump.
And what do you make Pam Bondi saying she's going to go after hate speech? Is that, I mean, a lot of people, a lot of your allies say hate speech is free speech.
She'll probably go after people like you because you treat me so unfairly. It's hate. You have a lot of hate in your heart. Maybe they'll come after ABC. Well, ABC paid me $16 million recently for a form of hate speech, right? Your company paid me $16 million for a form of hate speech. So maybe they'll have to go after you.
Okay, let's be really clear here. Hate speech by politicians, right? Hate speech by politicians is not the same thing as regular people criticizing politicians. It's not the same thing as a journalist asking a president tough questions. Hate speech by politicians with massive platforms and podcasters like Kirk and Alex Jones and Rush Limbaugh telling tens of millions of people every day that Democrats and liberals and gay people and black folks and brown folks and immigrants and women and anybody who's not a land-owning rich white dude that can write hundreds of millions of dollars worth of checks to Donald Trump and the MAGA movement are vermin and the enemy from within and Marxist, socialist, communist, fascist, whatever it is. We have to be able to say in the face of that, that what Donald Trump is saying, what Pam Bondi is saying, both of those things at the same time, they're both wrong. And yet we should also be able to condemn as bigoted and regressive and antithetical to our American experiment the language of people like Charlie Kirk. My right to criticize him should not make me subject to criminal RICO prosecutions, as threatened by Stephen Miller.
And threatened by the chief federal law enforcement officer of the United States of America. We will go after you. Look back in history to find another attorney general who's made those kinds of threats.
You wouldn't find one. Another FCC chair to say the same kind of things. Let's listen to Brendan Carr threaten media outlets. This is Cut 34. This is the chair of the FCC.
President Trump ran against immense odds. These legacy media outlets threw everything at him, almost every single hoax imaginable, right? Biden is sharp as a tack, burying the Hunter Biden laptop story, the Russia collusion hoax. And most politicians would have just gone along with that narrative or not fought at all. But President Trump punched back. And when he did so, he was standing up for the American people that simply don't trust those outlets anymore. We at the FCC are going to enforce the public interest obligation. If there's broadcasters out there that don't like it, they can turn their license in to the FCC. But that's our job. And again, we're making some progress now.
When in 2019, Brendan Carr said the FCC does not have a roving mandate to police speech in the name of public interest. That was posted on X at 10:05 a.m. on February 14th, 2019. Now he says they do. I wonder why that is.
And it's a footnote, Maggie, but here's the other piece, which, again, going back to your concept that this is being done by proxy, let's remember, too, that the Federal Communications Commission was created by the Congress to be an independent agency. You are not motivated by these kinds of things, not because the president was criticized by somebody on late night television. You make a determinations about communications issues independent of politics. That was the congressional mandate. Are we seeing
which
that now?
What, Which is what Brendan Carr wrote on page like 845 of Project 2025. He wrote that FCC is an independent agency. It's not now.
It is not.
Donald Trump says to a journalist, we're going to go after you, your hate speech. And the journalist said, would that be appropriate? Well, it's appropriate if you ask the president a tough question. My God. I mean, Laura Loomer, Blake Masters, Chris Rufo. I'm looking at Elon Musk. The left is the party of murder on the day of Charlie Kirk's death. Sean Davis. These are all major MAGA influencers. And the fact that Elon Musk owns one of the world's largest communication platforms. I've been promising you all day that we would get to the big, big picture. What's actually going on and why it's bad for every American and every Wisconsinite. Me, you, Jim Santel. We're going to lay that out for you next. Don't go anywhere, folks. It's Friday on the Maggie Dawn Show. You never want to miss it. You're listening to Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn with Jim Santel, a former U.S. attorney. We're talking about speech, and we're talking about the government's role in policing or not policing speech. And I want to jump right in, Jim, before we go to the phones, and I'm going to do that just in 2 minutes, but I want to set it up thusly. The right, back during the Biden administration, if you remember Twittergate, was incensed that the Biden administration met with some of the folks that control social media platforms over concerns about two things largely. Mm-hmm. One was COVID misinformation and disinformation, and the second was the influence through largely like troll and bot farms from foreign adversaries like Russia, China, etc., trying to meddle in our election processes. The difference that I would like to get your reaction to is that in those meetings, they weren't telling Elon Musk or Twitter, Mark Zuckerberg, what to do. And in fact, when Elon Musk eventually bought Twitter and released the, quote, Twitter files, it was basically an enormous nothing burger. It revealed, yep, there is some content moderation that Twitter engaged in before Elon Musk released the far-right Nazi trolls to say whatever they wanted to on what is now known as X. But it was a series of meetings. They expressed concerns about this, wanted to understand how the platforms monitor content. And the right was saying, no, it's all free speech. You can say whatever you want. Doesn't matter how bad it is, what violence is called for. It's fine. They sued over it. And the distinction that I'd like to point out there between what is happening now from the Trump administration and what the Biden administration did was this. We should have a very difficult, challenging, and intentional discussion in this country about what the responsibility should be of social media platforms. What are their responsibilities? Should they continue to have blanket immunity? Does that work well for our society?
Supreme Court wrestling with lots of those issues in recent terms and the future as well.
And I'll even grant that it made me uncomfortable as well that the Biden administration was engaging in those things because there was no framework. There was no legal framework for that would govern how those discussions would happen. But if you take it at face, what was the Biden administration trying to do? They didn't threaten the licenses. Mm-hmm. They didn't threaten to block mergers. They didn't do any of that. They didn't try to extort these people. They were asking these questions because they were concerned about public health, safety, and welfare.
And that's exactly the reason why the courts came down and said that's okay to do that. Because the government, again, as a part of the constitutional mandate given to the executive branch, the White House, has responsibility to keep us safe and secure. And part of that, as Brett Kavanaugh, who used to be inside the White House, said, we do this all the time when it comes to media. We reach out. We talk to people. We're not compelling them to do things, but we're identifying those times when we are in disagreement with them. And yes, indeed, on behalf of the people of the United States of America, when we see something in a system, a published, overt thing that people have access to that provides advice that is going to kill them and is going to compromise
their health. Yeah, that is medically inaccurate. Right, right.
We have an obligation to address that and not do it in a way, number one, that will compel them to do it by virtue of some threat, but also to do it in a way that accomplishes something good. And that's the other thing that underlies all of what you've been talking about this afternoon.
And the big thing here was that the court found that there was not a violation.
No problem here.
So let's take a couple calls. I know CJ wants to get in on this. CJ, if you can, we got a couple of people queued up. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I hate the word fascist, but I think Colorado proved trying to keep Trump off the ballot. That's fascist. And, you know,
in good faith, a Colorado court felt that he had fomented an insurrection. They followed Colorado law. It was eventually redone, and he was on the ballot. Right. Next point.
Well, yeah, it took the Supreme Court, but, you know.
That is simply completely irrelevant. The Colorado law says that if you engage in insurrection, you can't be on the ballot. In good faith, assessing that, do you think that all of those people that were there on January 6th would have been there absent Donald Trump saying to people that the election was stolen for 6 months?
And CJ, let's talk about process.
Jim. I want CJ to answer that question. Would the people have been there on January 6th if Donald Trump had not told them a lie for 6 months, told them that the election was stolen?
There's a lot of inconsistency in that election, and people should be allowed. There's a difference between
he didn't talk about that, CJ. He said it was a lie. I won. There were numerous court cases. Not a single one of them found anything. There was never any direct evidence that there was anything that would have changed the outcome of the election. Don't you think a man that wants to be president has a responsibility to at least correctly present that to people?
Wasn't there a clerk fired for not counting votes just this week? Or
wasn't
recently?
A clerk so in another county, CJ, imprisoned? Is she not still in prison for allowing illegal access? The 200 ballots that weren't counted in Madison, one, that clerk has been fired. Two, it was an accident and or dereliction of duty. She's out of a job, and 200 votes wouldn't have made a hill of beans difference anyways. And what do you care about Dane County? All those people probably voted for Joe Biden in the first place. Next point.
Well, to hear the word fascist and Hitler thrown around.
I haven't said Hitler. I've said the word fascist and Nazi. Do you know your history? Do you know how long it took Hitler to come to power? Took him less than 3 months. Do you know that he called people vermin? Said that their blood was poisoning, that Jews were poisoning the blood of Germany? Does this sound familiar? Has the president used those same phrases, CJ? Has he used the word vermin and poisoning the blood of our country? Were those words that Hitler said?
You know,
answer the question. The president of the United States has referred to immigrants and groups of people as vermin and that they have poisoned the blood of this country. Are those terms that Hitler used? Yes or no?
Oh, my gosh.
The answer to that question, CJ, is yes. And let me move on to the data, because CJ can say it's all fine. It's a problem when you say fascist, Maggie, but it's not a problem when Donald Trump says fascist. Oh, Jacob, play. Will you play that again? Play Donald Trump talking about Harris again.
The divide in American politics today is between these far left fascists led by Harris and her group. We have a fascist person running who's incompetent.
She's a Marxist, communist, fascist, socialist. She's not actually a socialist. She's gone past that.
Somebody's got to explain this one.
That's good enough. I want to talk about the data because I don't want to lose my temper. CJ, I just wanted to engage with you in the specifics because here I think they matter. They matter a lot. This is not time for the both sides. Okay, so hold on, folks. Jim and I are going to get to the data. Here's Jeannie from Eau Claire. Jeannie, thank you for your patience. Say hello to Jim. What you got for us?
Hi, Jeannie. How are you?
Hi, you guys. I'll be ready at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Very good.
Very
wonderful.
Good. It's outstanding. But I want to say something. You guys are doing an outstanding job. everybody share this with anybody that you know, because people need to learn this information. These are facts, and we got to pay attention, and you guys are doing an outstanding job. Keep it up. I'm very thankful for you two. Keep it up. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Jeannie, and one of our longest listeners and callers, Mark from Prairie du Sac. Say hello to Jim.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark, you there? I think we lost Mark. Mm. Let's go through some of the data.
Yes.
Because this is so important to me. First of all, reporting from yesterday, Thursday, and Wednesday from The Hill and various other outlets says this. The Justice Department removed from its website a study showing that far-right extremists were responsible for the bulk of ideologically motivated deaths. A move that comes as the GOP seeks to back claims from President Trump that it's the radical left. They scrubbed the study. It's been on their website since Trump took office, but mysteriously, they scrubbed the study that statistically disproves their claim that it is the radical left. That happened this week. Here's what the study said. Quote, the number of far-right attacks continues to outpace all other types of terrorism and domestic violence extremism. I'm going to read that to you again for those in the back of the room. Quote, this is from our own Department of Justice. This is the National Institute of Justice data. Quote, the number of far-right attacks continues to outpace all other types of terrorism and domestic violent extremism. Since 1990, far-right extremists have committed far more ideologically motivated homicides than far-left or radical Islamist extremists, including 227 events that took more than 520 lives. In this same period, far-left extremists committed 42 ideologically motivated attacks that took 78 lives. Okay, well, there it is, 520 versus 78. Let's get it from a different source, you know, Grok. It's the AI-generated thing that Elon Musk has going on Twitter. Grok was asked the same question. Where do we have more violence from? Grok responded, based on FBI and DHS reports from 2020 to 2025, domestic terrorism incidents and fatalities are predominantly linked to right-wing ideologies, such as racially motivated or anti-government extremism. 329 deaths from the far right versus 23 from the far left per CSIS and START data. It goes on. How about Gary LaFrie of the University of Maryland, professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice, and the founding director of the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism. Our analysis shows that right-wing actors are significantly more violent than left-wing actors. How about the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, conservatives, Donald Trump, Charlie Kirk? I'm sure CJ likes to claim that they're big, big, big supporters of Israel. Well, then let's pay attention to what the ADL says. They put out a study. It basically shows that right-wing violence since 2013 is absolutely dwarfing left-wing extremist violence. How about this from the Cato Institute? That's not a left-leaning organization. It's libertarian to right-leaning. From the Cato Institute, here's the quote from their study. Politically motivated murders since 1975, our analysis of politically motivated murders since 1975 shows that most political violence comes from the right. That's Cato. Again, most political violence comes from the right. And we're in this moment, Jim, where Democrats are apparently going to support the Charlie Kirk Memorial Resolution in Congress. Oklahoma is threatening to compel schools and universities to put a Charlie Kirk Memorial on their campuses. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to get Jim back involved. We're going to close out this discussion on a positive note. If you can believe it, I'm going to get it done with you because we got to go into the weekend on the upswing. But facts matter. Reality matters. I'm Maggie Dawn with former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and all of you. We'll be back with more in just a moment right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. We've had a challenging discussion today. I want to thank my friend, although we vehemently disagree sometimes, CJ from Stoughton, from calling in. He also shared some data on the text line that said, according to the Network Contagion Research Institute, a place I had never heard of before, 59% of self-identifying liberals said that destroying Tesla dealerships in protest is, quote, partially acceptable, end quote. Well, I'm just going to say this. All of the data that I just read to you was about people dying, actual violence. It's one thing to conceive of something. It's another to ask a question in the way that elicits this sort of a response. By the way, I did a little digging on the Network Contagion Research Institute during the break. And the Cato Institute, again here, which is a libertarian right-leaning organization, has roundly criticized the NCRI as making remarkably basic errors in its methodology and basically not having anything peer-reviewed, not making their data public, all sorts of data collection errors. I'll just tell you that question itself, self-identifying liberals, said destroying Tesla dealerships in protest is partially acceptable. You can skew something by asking a survey question in a particular way. You know what I'm saying? Whew. Anyways, Jim, I wanted to give you the opportunity to just give some closing thoughts
here. Absolutely. I want to follow up on the reporting that you just did before the last break on this notion that our attorney general, again, the chief federal law enforcement officer for the United States of America, plainly with her imprimatur, with her okay, has scrubbed, removed from access on the publicly available line for the Department of Justice a report. Unlike what CJ has just reported, you've got it just right. Those reports from the FBI on the Department of Justice are not polls. The Department of Justice does not take those kinds of polls and publish them. It reports on criminal activity. It reports on things that happen in America. That's been the way it's been for the last. I worked for 9 different attorneys general that entire period of time. When the government, and in this case, the attorney general, removes a report, she's not removing something related to a survey. She's removing something that reports on what the reality is in America, what has happened in our nation, and the nature of this kind of conduct. And again, you and I both know as trial attorneys, when you eliminate something, what are you also saying? I don't want
anybody to know
to see this, right?
Yeah.
And that in and of itself acknowledges that you've got a problem. And that the reality of the real world out there does not support the position you're taking publicly. I once again, as I often do, say shame on the Attorney General of the United States of America for doing this.
Couple of things. The big picture here is that basically Trump is picking winners and losers in the media space. And those that align themselves with Trump and agree to censor as Trump likes are going to get mergers approved. They're going to have their licenses protected. And those that don't, won't. That is the government trying to control what you can read, what you know, what access to facts you are. And that's supported by the DOJ deleting the study that we just talked about. They talked about actual acts of violence, not some hypothetical state where maybe I might do something. But to be clear, any kind of violence, property destruction, is bad. But political violence is a term that seems to suggest some kind of moral distinction between violence against politicians and violence by politicians. It is simply not fair, nor accurate, nor based in any reputable peer-reviewed data analysis to say that the left wing is more extremist, producing more acts of violence than the right is. That's false. But it's also, to a degree, beside the point. In American politics, we have sides. There's no use pretending that we don't, but we take up these sides and these arguments because we actually are supposed to have a shared project to further our democracy, to better opportunities, to see more equity and equality. I can handle losing an argument or an election, but what I can't handle is when hate and bigotry is defended as good and righteous, when someone who peddled and profiteered from hate and bigotry is lauded as a national hero. I can handle losing an election and an argument because I know that there will be another election. There will be another argument. But the violence against Mr. Kirk, the violence against the Minnesota legislator, Melissa Hortman, against Mr. Pelosi, against judges' children, against liberals, and against conservatives alike, imperils our shared project and our shared purpose. And we should call it all out repeatedly. But our shared project of democracy is not helped by acting like hate speech isn't hateful or that bigotry isn't bigotry. I've quoted this a number of times on my show. It's from Robert Jones Jr. We can disagree and we can still love each other. Unless and until your disagreement is rooted in my oppression and the denial of my humanity and the right to exist. So I ask you, listener, whether you agree or disagree with me, does our disagreement, does your set of beliefs require the stripping of rights and the denial of humanity, the oppression of people that you disagree with? Because if it does, might you need to look in the mirror a little bit harder? Might we need to ask more and better of Donald Trump and the Republican Party today? We must all be able to speak and to speak safely, because unless all of us are safe, not a single one of us actually is. Thanks to Jim Santel and all of you. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.